Pass the Mic is made possible by a grant from the T. Rowe Price Foundation, recognizing 45 years of advancing thriving communities and building financial well-being. The views and opinions expressed in this program are those of the participants and do not reflect the views of the T. Rowe Price Foundation, T. Rowe Price, or any of their subsidiaries or affiliates.
Pass the mic.
Hand that to me.
Pass it over here.
Pass the mic.
Welcome to Pass the Mic. I'm Abdu Mongo Ali, and I'll be your host for today's episode. I am an electronic musician, poet, and cross-disciplinary artist born and raised in Baltimore. I've been working as a music artist for over a decade, and recently I was the inaugural composer in residence at the Baltimore Museum of Art, where I created a sound piece and performance that considered how the ecological conditions of Maryland inform Black life and culture.
Without further ado, please help me in welcoming Abdu Mongo Ali.
Between the breath, there is the atmosphere. Between the breath, there is the light. Between the breath, there is the darkness. Between the breath, there is the atmosphere. You are atmosphere.
I wanted to take the opportunity to explore that topic further with my guests, my friends, my girls. And with me today are the artists Armina Haweda Musa and Tracy Beal.
Hi, Abdu.
Thank you for having me, Abdu.
Sorry.
Sorry. So it's hard doing this with your friends.
Yes.
Okay. Armina Haweda Musa is a sculptor whose practice centers on ceramic vessels and ground-based installations informed by artifacts, earth cosmologies, and material research. Her work explores the tension between ancient and modern narratives. Musa engages the tactile and the symbolic power of material to examine the forces that shape our existence. So Armina, I want to first begin by talking about just your overall artistic practice. Where did it begin for you to start working with clay and building and creating sculptures?
So I've been working with clay for 10 years now,
mm-hmm.
and previously started in photography.
Right.
I don't have any formal teaching or formal background in art. So I didn't know at the time that these things were all kind of in relation mm-hmm. to each other. And so arriving to clay came with wanting to experience these three-dimensional forms or gestures, like, spatially. Clay is approachable, right? It's earth itself. And it's also an easy entryway because it's this malleable and soft material, but then it also hardens through firings and times and however, you know, you use it.
You know, clay is a very everyday quotidian, like, material to work
mm-hmm.
with. It's super, I mean, assuming that is an affordable material to work
oh,
with,
for
right?
sure, yeah.
I mean, I'm not no art historian, but there has been so many indigenous cultures around the world who have, you know, relics and artifacts and art that is made with clay and dirt, soil, etc. I see clay as like a material that is very much so connected through different times and space. Like
humans have been
mm-hmm. using it for centuries. And I'm just wondering, when we think about memory, when we think about spirituality, is there something that you feel when you are literally like holding the clay in your hands?
There's a whole process to the making that happens in order for this transmuting to happen.
Yes.
So it's like part of the process completely takes over you.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that moment, you are transmuting or even downloading messages. It's almost as if sometimes energetically you become whole as the form materializes. So it's come to me in different ways,
right?
It's come to me in migraines.
Oh, wow. I love that.
Like,
that's very Octavia Butler. Yeah. So when it comes to the formation of your sculptures, is that improvisational? Is that intuitive? Or do you have a set blueprint or drawing of them before you begin? Or is it both?
Yeah, I think the intuition of how the form should exist based on two things, right? Is this going to survive, like, the anatomy of it? The forms that I work in are, you know, meant to feel like this grew, right? Or this practice some form of resistance. So it's almost like catching something in between, like within a gravitational pull, maybe. I've been working with the same form for a couple of years. It's this like horn-like form, and it, you know, at one point used to be a fountain to me. So I just was kind of thinking about what that means metaphorically. And then also it now feels like a part of the body, you know? You know, I think within clay, and I just think about ourselves in relation to clay and earth, is that it is a part of the body. I don't know if that answered your question.
No, for sure. And I feel like for me, I'm like, oh, it's the architecture that works. What are the homes in like South America, the adobe?
Is clay, and it's usually three elements. You know, I even learned this through the walls in these machia homes in Japan are literally like hay, lime juice, and mud.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I was thinking about.
Like these vessels I'm making are small cosmologies of these larger forms.
When I think about your sculptures, that's what I think about. Like, I'm thinking about mud houses. I'm thinking about igloos. I'm thinking about these kind of ancient, classic, like, forms of architecture that is literally made of the land, mud, the material that people had around them. Your sculptures, to me, always felt like sculptures of nature. Right? They have this very natural, organic aesthetic and formation that I found really beautiful. And your sculptures don't really even feel like they've been made by hand. They feel like they've been made by just natural
occurrences,
yeah. Right? And I wanted to ask you, like, what do you think about when you're, like, installing your work in an actual space, right?
Yeah. I mean, I wish I had choice over space. As a mid-career emerging artist, I wish that that was something I had more choice over, because I am very uninterested in most spaces.
Mm-hmm.
Like, aesthetically, yes, would love for these pieces to exist in nature. Oh, I hope I'm not getting his name wrong, but Sofu Tashikahara, who was a founder of one of the first Ikebana schools. Ikebana is just the practice of arrangement in nature and using foliage, branches, flowers. He's a sculptor himself, but he was like able to situate earth in this insane way, like tree trunks and tree branches, but scale it really large. If anything, I would maybe work with clay in this more raw sense, where it's like I'm arranging earth itself rather than taking clay from the earth, materializing it into its form and then putting it back in earth, which there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
But I would like to do it more within a natural sensibility.
So when we were on the phone, you was talking about how you maybe consider your practice as a ground-based practice.
Mm.
And I would love for you to describe what that means in the relationship of the material you work with and just the formation of your sculptures, everything. Like, for you, what does it mean to have a ground-based practice?
One, it allows me to not exist within these flattened terms of ceramicist. That also comes with a lot of quote-unquote traditional rules and techniques. And I think ground-based means that I'm signaling that I'm aware that I'm working with earth and that this is not just a vessel or a vase or a cup, you know? So it signals something else that is also like me being aware of these ancient systems and technologies that I feel that I come from. So it's just, I'm literally working and bending earth in a sense.
I love that. Earthbender. Period.
That is so funny.
I love that. I've been speaking with sculptor Armina Haweda Musa. When we come back, I'll welcome Tracy Beal into the conversation. We will also discuss our artistic practices more broadly and how our environments and nature impact our work. Stay with us.
You're listening to Pass the Mic on 88.1 WYPR. Want to be part of the conversation? Suggest a guest host for Pass the Mic by writing to us at ptm@bemorepublicmedia.org. You can listen to more episodes of Pass the Mic at our website, wypr.org, or wherever you get podcasts. Baltimore Public Media, community amplified.
Welcome back. You're listening to Pass the Mic. It's the show where WYPR passes the microphone to our community, artists, activists, and change makers of all kind, and asks them to lead the conversation. I'm Abdu Mongo Ali, your host for today's episode. We're talking about artistic practice, the influence of our environment on our creative work, and how the ecological conditions of Maryland inform Black life and culture. Tracy Beal is an artist. Her primary practice is experimental metalsmithing and jewelry design, informed by the concept of alchemy and ancient African adornments. She creates modern relics, spiritually charged designs that combine various metals such as copper, gold, sterling, and brass with found and sentimental objects. Tracy works as an arts program producer and co-leads a diverse ministry with her partner, Minister Megan McLeod. Tracy, welcome to Pass the Mic.
Hello, Abdu. It's nice to be here.
Yes. Thanks for being here as a metalsmith. Smither. Where did it begin practicing and working with metal and designing jewelry?
I feel like the metal found me. I first just started thinking about jewelry making as something that I could do through like an African anthropology class. And so I learned about different tribes, particularly like Fulani women and like how their jewelry had meaning. And I have been like a lover of jewelry for so long. Like I was like the girl who wore a ring on every finger, a bunch of bracelets up the arm. And I just thought that I was being cute, you know? And so having learned like through that anthropology class, how jewelry has these like deeper meanings and these deeper like expressions of self and culture and your worth within a community and so forth. Like that made me curious about making jewelry. And then metal was just sort of like this component that held things together, right? So I would like work with stones and like wrap them. And then I started to just fall in love with the feel of the metal, you know what I mean? And then like thinking back to those Fulani earrings, because they're like my favorite, and Fulani women. I mean, if we think about like our hoop earrings that we wear, and particularly like Black and brown women, Latino women, like it mimics that of the Fulani women and their Fulani earrings, the basic jewelry that we wear. Everything starts as either like a sheet of metal or wire, and they become these gorgeous things like wedding rings or necklaces or earrings or pendants. You know what I mean? Like that idea of transforming this material that can go from like liquid to being like hard as steel. It's like mind-boggling to me.
Right. There's this fluidity to the material, right? And it's kind of like this maybe femininity to it as well. Or like this. And I want to ask you, because you spoke on how like when you started doing research around a Fulani woman, right? And so for you, when it comes to your work and your designs, what would you say is your work evoking the meaning? What types of feelings or protections or et cetera is there embedded in the jewelry that you create and make?
Well, they're essentially talisman pieces. I create it from a space of storytelling and meaning. I use a lot of shattered glass in my work, particularly like windshield glass. And that's tells the story of sometimes life breaks us, life will shatter us, you know, and we have to sort of pick up our pieces and put ourselves back together. It came from an actual situation. Someone broke into my car and then I'm left with all of this glass, you know what I mean? Like shattered glass everywhere, and only to understand in that moment, realizing how beautiful the glass was. It's just like, okay, I'm mad, but at the same time, this is absolutely gorgeous for some reason. And I also think a lot about shapes. Circles have certain meanings in my work. Triangles are a big motif, sort of like this representation of power, which also takes you back to a place of religion and theology. There's always like these big three, you know what I mean?
So you work with different types of metals, right? And so when it comes to that psychic element or that emotional, spiritual element, how does the different metals inform the pieces, the differences between bronze, gold, sterling, etc.?
Well, copper for me is like my base metal.
it's the most raw, in a sense. When you think about jewelry, copper is probably your quote-unquote least valuable metal, right? Maybe bronze might be but under healing. That, I'm not sure. But say it again.
It has healing properties.
Yeah. Yeah. We can talk about that for days. Copper has a myriad of colors within it. So when I do flame painting with copper, which is essentially heating copper at different temperatures, it'll go from like pink to red to blue to gray or black. It's magical to me. Mm. And the process of working with metal and creating is very much like prayer for me. I can't do anything but pay attention to what I'm doing. No matter what I make, I always make it in copper first. Okay. So if I know I'm like, okay, I'm going to make it in gold, or I'm going to use brass, or I'm going to, you know, work with silver. There's a brilliance to silver that I think is quite lovely. And that you can oxidize and make it go from like gray to black and almost like a blue black when you oxidize it. But copper, it soaks up a lot of heat. She kind of funny acting, copper.
Isn't copper really good at conducting electricity, too? Mm-hmm. Which is really interesting.
It's all over the place. Like, it's yeah. probably in these microphones and in these wires. Like, copper is just, it's everywhere and also overlooked. Yeah, did I answer your question?
And I wanted to ask you about the other, like, gold and silver and bronze.
Gold is, I feel like that's a cultural thing. A lot of times that's requested from me. Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting. The price of gold has gone up tremendously. In some cases, it can be a barrier for some people starting to work in jewelry because it is so expensive. But also think about how we get gold, right? And how some people's lives are in jeopardy when it comes to gold. Mm-hmm. I think about the color as well. My favorite's like 22, 24 karat gold, which tends to be extremely soft and you don't make a whole lot of things out of it. And it's rather thick, but there's like this ochery kind of beautiful yellow mm-hmm. to it that feels very much from the ground and from the earth. I like for my work to look and feel like it was found somewhere. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, the formation of your work is similar to Armina's. It's very natural. I feel like you don't force the material into a certain type of aesthetic.
Mm-hmm. One thing that's important to me is for it to not have to be perfect by whatever we consider perfection standards. But a big part of what I want to do is like capture a particular spirit. I do have a collection of necklaces that are meant to be worn as a protection or as a reminder of who you are as an individual, as a person, because a lot of times we're going through life and we get taken outside of ourselves by different things.
Yeah, that's beautiful. You work with these metals, but you also work with found objects and, mm-hmm. and things that you just find out in nature, specifically flowers, right?
I call them little tiny boos. I started working with some herbs just recently. I made this series of necklaces that have calendula in them. But the flowers, for me, are like coming out of a place of gestation. I've worked with a lot of heavy materials. Like, the glass has a heavy connotation in the sense of, like, we're thinking about how life shatters us. So we're, you know, doing shadow work or looking deep within ourselves. When I think about flowers, there's a simplicity to it in terms of how it makes you feel. There's a brightness. Tulips in particular. Tulips and roses, and it's interesting, I don't particularly like roses. But they have a social meaning to them mm-hmm. that I find really interesting, like this idea of self-love or showing love for another person. And then tulips, to me, are just these really, how do I say it? To me, tulips are like these, like, sexy flowers. They're like the sexy flowers. There's something really lovely about their petals. So when I'm working with bits of tulip, I'm thinking about like sensuality and passion and creating this piece that kind of energy can be accessed, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Armin, I would love to welcome you back into the conversation. My next set of questions are for the both of you. Wait, where did you grow up?
Here. Okay, Baltimore cool. And Northern Maryland.
Mm-hmm. You grew up in Silver Spring, Maryland. Okay, so.
We're Maryland.
Marylanders. As Marylanders. Okay, so Maryland is a really interesting state because it has so many different environments and different forms of nature and texture. I'm curious to hear from you both. How do you think growing up where you grew up maybe informs the work that you do? Armina, can you start?
there is a connection to, you know, earth in the sense of like I kind of remember experimenting with dirt. Montgomery County, where I'm from, is like kind of a swamp, right? So the earth had always felt soft growing up. You know, my sisters and I, we would just do the unthinkable with dirt, like... But my connection to earth was through like kind of tasting it and working with it as a kid, you know, just building stuff with it. And I've known this land to be kind of wet and swampy and very humid.
Right. But I was also just thinking specifically about my performance at the BMA, the atmosphere, right? And how we are beings that was cultivated out of a certain atmosphere, right? And I think the different regions that we grew up in, the way the sun hits the land, the air, all the different things, I think they do inform like how we move, how we talk, the complexion of our skin, everything, and then the sounds we like to hear, the foods we like to taste, etc. So I'm curious to see if you think that the atmosphere where you grew up at, has that trickled down into like different qualities of your work?
I would say for sure. You were just talking about being a kid and being like doing all the things with dirt, and you reminded me of a time being a little girl playing with broken glass on the ground and my mother turning around and my fingertips are bleeding, right? But it didn't hurt. But it was just like, oh, this glass is so beautiful.
Not you playing with
I was. It was like, but we lived in Baltimore City, right? So there's the concrete. There's like trees in a cage, the marble steps, tar roof. So there's like that smell and like timing when I would go outside based on where the sun was hitting, because when you live in like this row home situation, when the sun's on the opposite side, it creates shade on one side of the street. Like, okay, we can play on my side of the block when it's shady because it's July and it's 1,000 degrees.
Right.
Like, even just like working with you on your performance, there's this sort of club music, house music vibe, like resistant vibe to your work. You know what I mean? And that's very Baltimore. That's very like, very much of this area.
For whatever reason, as an adult, when I think about my childhood and growing up in Baltimore, I clearly remember how the sun hits us in the summertime.
I do not know why.
But it's a very specific type of sun. And when I think about club music, right, and I think about house music, I just intuitively feel like that to be the score of black life in the summertime for whatever reason, because club music is is fun, it's jovial, you know, it's fun to dance to, but at the same time, there's a lot of tension in club music. There's a lot of pressure in the sound, right? Which I feel like is kind of the atmospheric vibe of Baltimore, because, you know, we having fun, you know, we playing with the fire hydrants and, you know, ice cream truck, But in Baltimore, in the summertime, that's when things go down too, right? And people are, you know, a little bit more fiery. So I feel like there's certain cities in this country that has a very specific vibe to them. And I think literally it's because of where they are positioned. And I think that matters a lot. You know, we're from a state that is literally situated on the Atlantic. And speaking of water, right, I wanted to ask you both, being people, mid-Atlantic beings and creatures that grew up in close proximity to water, how does the ocean inform your work? Well, how does water come into play? And it could be spiritual, psychic.
Yeah.
Water's like an activation in your life. If you're using clay, it activates, right?
Yeah, so that's what I was thinking.
It runs throughout. Like, so it's...
You're right. It also is the tool to expand something, to soften something, to smooth something.
Oh, that's interesting. So your water is my fire. Like, what I do with fire with metal, you do with water with clay.
Yes.
So exciting.
I guess what you're saying is that you use fire to materialize.
It stretches.
That's
when things become malleable.
Yeah.
So metal gets malleable when you heat it. The molecules sort of spread out and allow you to be able to bend it and shape it more. And so the more you manipulate it, the harder it becomes. Like, the more the molecules start to, like... And then the water quenches it.
So like, do you use water too?
There's like a water bath that I have, and then there's like a what's called a pickle bath, which is essentially like acid with water.
Okay.
And that eats the fire scale away. So like when you fire a metal, there's like what's called fire scale that comes over it. Mm-hmm. It's like this gray, it's supposed to be icky, but I think it's kind of cool. I'm still working on how to keep that look because it's just the oxidation process. And then of course with cleaning, it's like a base.
Purifying.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a pleasure. Armina and Tracy, thank you so much for being here. You've been listening to Pass the Mic, WYPR's community-driven radio program. To learn more, visit WYPR.org. That's a wrap, baby. I'm like, oh, I'm over here working, honey. I'm like, my life just been so crazy.
Pass the Mic is produced by Elizabeth Nonemaker, senior producer Mallory Pinkard-Pierre, and executive producer Amy Walters. The music you're listening to is from the premiere of Between Every Breath, There Is Atmosphere, performed by Abdu Mongo Ali, Mark Navarro, and Dower Jiang. Audio provided courtesy of the artist and the Baltimore Museum of Art. This is a presentation of Baltimore Public Media.